The X-Men 97 story resonates in ways that go beyond entertainment industry gossip. The show's creator, Bo DiMaio, is saying publicly that Marvel treated him as a, quote, DEI hire, meaning the company brought him on as a credential of diversity rather than as a creative professional whose judgment they trusted and supported. This is a charge that lands differently coming in the current political moment, when DEI programs at major corporations are being rolled back under legal and political pressure. DiMaio is essentially arguing that the surface-level optics of diverse hiring, absent genuine creative authority, is its own form of dismissal.
The broader context here is that X-Men 97 was critically acclaimed. It won significant audience attention and strong reviews, which makes the creator's account of his treatment more pointed. A show can succeed commercially while its creator feels professionally disrespected. And those two things don't cancel each other out. The entertainment industry has been grappling with this tension for years. The difference between diversity as representation in the final product versus diversity as meaningful participation in creative and decision-making power.
Kamala Harris, reaching out to NYC Mayor Zoran Mamdani ahead of 2028, is a political story wrapped in a cultural one. Mamdani, who is giving an America 250 speech this Friday, represents a particular strand of progressive politics. He ran on a platform that was explicitly socialist in its framing, and he won in New York City. Harris appears to be mapping the coalition landscape for a potential 2028 run, and that coalition includes Mamdani's base. Whether that outreach represents genuine ideological alignment or tactical positioning is a question worth watching as the next presidential cycle develops.
Ken Griffin's helipad application at his Miami Beach marina is the kind of story that functions almost as cultural shorthand. The Citadel founder, one of the wealthiest hedge fund managers in the world, wants to add a private helipad to his already approved mega yacht compound on Terminal Island. Miami Beach's permitting process, being the arena where this plays out, is almost satirically perfect. A city that has built its identity around wealth display, now being asked to accommodate the logical endpoint of that display.
And the U.S. State Department designating Ecuador's Chone Killers as a foreign terrorist organization is a policy development that gets less attention than it deserves. The Chone Killers splintered from Los Choneros in 2020 and have been accused of assassinating public officials in Ecuador. FTO and SDGT designations allow the U.S. to impose financial sanctions, restrict material support, and complicate the group's ability to operate internationally. Ecuador has been experiencing a genuine security crisis involving multiple criminal organizations, and U.S. designation is one tool in a complicated counter-narcotics and anti-gang policy toolkit.
Now, before we wrap this segment, I want to do something we do periodically on this show, genuinely interrogate one of the confident conclusions we've been drawing today. The claim I want to examine is the one embedded in the AI infrastructure narrative, the assumption that building more compute capacity is unambiguously good for American strategic position in AI.
Walk me through the challenge.
The confident claim is essentially, more GPUs, more data centers, more capital investment equals stronger U.S. AI leadership. The SoftBank NeoCloud, the NVIDIA revenue sharing, the MGX fund, the OpenAI government stake, they all rest on the premise that raw compute advantage translates into sustained strategic dominance. But here's what would need to be true for that to be wrong. First, it assumes that the bottleneck to AI capability is compute rather than algorithmic innovation. If the next major capability breakthrough comes from a training efficiency advance, a new architecture that does more with less, then a country with less compute but better researchers could leapfrog a compute-heavy leader. China's development of indigenous chips under export ban pressure is exactly this kind of forced efficiency innovation.
That's a real consideration. The export ban's story today specifically noted that U.S. restrictions are accelerating China's push to close the gap. There's a version of this where restricting Chinese access to American chips produces a Chinese semiconductor industry that's genuinely competitive within 5 years. And the export ban turns out to have been the catalyst for that competition rather than its prevention.
Second assumption worth questioning, the FTC's strange AI bias policy statement could be read not just as confusion, but as the early signal of a regulatory environment that becomes actively hostile to safety-conscious AI development in the U.S. If American companies face legal liability for implementing safeguards while Chinese companies face no equivalent constraint, the competitive landscape changes in ways that raw compute investment doesn't address.
And third, the environmental bottleneck. The gas plant emissions data we covered today isn't an externality that can be indefinitely deferred. If U.S. AI data center buildout is constrained by power grid capacity, environmental permitting, or ultimately by water availability for cooling, compute investment could hit physical limits faster than the financial models assume.
So the concrete signal to watch, if you see Chinese AI labs publishing papers in 2027 that demonstrate training efficiency gains of 5x or more compared to current leading methods, that's the indicator that the compute dominance thesis is under genuine stress. Not the chips themselves. Watch the algorithmic literature.